I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's time for shower thoughts now. These are those questions that occur to you when you are resting your mind in the serenity of water and steam and the cleansing power of the shower. Questions sometimes pop into your head. And we make it our job here on Nights to try to answer some of those questions. Tonight's is, does anyone own outer space? So we dialed up space thought expert Dr. Maria Pozza.
This must be one of the most asked questions that I hear often, and I'm sure space lawyers around the world frequently encounter this question. It's a really important question. I like to stick with the international law that deems space is free for all nations to explore and outer space is not subject to national appropriation by claim of sovereignty, by means of use or occupation or by any other means. So what I'm getting at here is that no, space doesn't belong to anyone. And this question does come up a lot, especially recently, because what we're seeing is a rise in a lot more space-based activities. And so because we're seeing a lot more technological development, we're seeing new and innovative ways of space being utilized. And so this question does come up again, a lot. And as I say, we hear it a lot because we could actually draw a comparison to air law and space law here. So in air law, we've got this under international air law, nations have complete and exclusive sovereignty and control over their airspace above their territory. But in outer space, it's open to all nations. And the problem we have is that we don't know exactly where air law ends and space law begins. So this is one of the other reasons as well why we always hear this question, especially at the international level. Well, where's the demarcation line for space? You know, where does air law end and space law begin? So look, not to get too technical about it, I am going to just reiterate that under the international space law, there's no way for the international space law to recognise national appropriation by claim of sovereignty. But what we do have is this complex area that we're just not sure where the demarcation line is, and we're probably going to see more discussion about this at the international legal level. So sorry, that was a really complex question.
That was a great answer.
No, a really simple question.
That's good, because it lays it all out. But maybe we'll dig down into some of the issues there. But am I right in saying, so as a sort of summary of that, at the moment, we're all kumbaya about it. We're all philosophical. Space belongs to nobody, and therefore space belongs to everybody. Everything is good and fine, and nobody needs to fight each other about it because we are all at peace at the moment.
That's right. Look, under the international law, national appropriation of space wouldn't be recognised. So I like to think that maybe we are a little bit of a kumbaya about it at the moment, but that's what the international law says, that you cannot make a national appropriation of claim by sovereignty to space.
So just hypothetically, what might change wherein countries might be more aggressive or assertive in claiming... that's a terribly phrased question. Let me rephrase it. Why might a country want to exert sovereign authority over an area of outer space? Like, what utility is there to having control of a part of outer space for a country's national interests?
I'm going to take that question and actually take it just one step further and maybe to the left just slightly.
Sure.
And there is reason to my madness here. What we're seeing at the moment are big changes happening at the international level with consideration to the future of space sustainability. as we've discussed many times before, Emil, space is not rapidly self-cleansing. So when you put something up in space, like a space asset, a satellite, and you no longer need it, you start your deorbit, the deorbit procedures for that asset with the hope that eventually it's going to burn up into the atmosphere and that's the end of it. The problem is, though, is it takes a long time for that to happen. So we end up with a lot of clutter in space. Now, at the moment, it's manageable. But as more and more activities are occurring in space and as we're seeing more and more utilization in space, there is a question now as to, well, how do we ensure that space sustainability remains intact so that our future space exploration can continue? So these are some of the big questions that are being considered at the international level. Now, as I say, it's a step forward from your question to the left, but when we think about sustainability and when we think about cleaning up space debris, we do get back to those sorts of questions. Well, who does it belong to? Should they go and pick it up first? What if we have companies who decide to, you know, set up an organization that launches and then brings debris back to, you know, to burn up through the atmosphere in order to clean space? We then get back into those questions of, well, you know, responsibility, accountability, ownership, payment. So those are some of the big issues that are happening in space, and that leads me right back to where I started with. It's a complex question.
Yeah. Hey, here's a question. The International Space Station, who does that belong to? Like, for example, and to take it in a dark direction immediately, say a terrible crime were committed on the International Space Station. Do we know where it would be tried or who would be the presiding authority and stuff like that?
That must be the second most asked question I'm asked.
Here I was, thinking I was being all original.
The space station is made up of different nation states. So if something were to happen, then it would probably depend whereabouts on the space station
really?
It occurred
wow.
and which territory maybe it occurred on. But look, I like to think that if something were to happen, that our nations would get together and they would discuss the incident and find a very applicable, amicable way through it.
You talked about how maybe if we do end up having to apply ownership to space in the future. One way that we could do that is by taking, for example, like a map of territorial authority or exclusive economic zone and just sort of extending that out thousands and thousands of kilometres. And that would be pretty good news for New Zealand, right? Because we have a massive exclusive economic zone.
So I'm going to draw you back to our conversation about air law there.
Yeah.
So look, we can extend our sovereign claim in air law. And I suppose really what you're asking me then is, could we have a demarcation that is recognised as to where we could exert our influence and ownership? Is that what you're getting at? So what I would like to see is our international community finally agree on a demarcation line. There's an informal line at the moment. It's about 100 kilometres, and it's called the Kármán line. But I would like to see something formal in a hard law treaty, or at least in a soft international legal instrument that says, OK, the nations have got together and we've decided that the demarcation line between air law and space law is X. And that way we know that anything that happens over a nation state's territory below that mark is part of that nation's control. And anything that happens above it, then the international space law applies.
Now, here's a question. Does international space law also apply to other planets? So, for example, say Elon Musk launched himself up into space on a rocket that he'd been developing in secret, like, you know, in his hollowed-out volcano skull, and he landed on Mars, and he was wearing a spacesuit that allowed him to exist there, and he took the Tesla flag, and he planted it into Mars, and said, I claim Mars for Tesla. Would that have, I'm guessing that would have zero legal, actual legal authority to it, but why?
That is such a complex question, and I don't know if we've got enough time to deal with it. But what I will say is this. The international law is not as clear as it could be when it comes to planets. Now, there is provision under our five major international treaties that deal with celestial bodies. Now, As part of our interpretation, we probably would include planets as part of celestial bodies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got that first issue of interpretation. Secondly, what the other thing that I like to think about when thinking about those planets and what nation states do is I always go back to basics, back to the international principles, which is that space and those celestial bodies, they're free for all nations to explore. So because they can't, because there's no recognition of national claim of sovereignty over space or celestial bodies, then I think there might be a little bit of difficulty if someone were to stick their flag maybe in Mars. But hey, who knows? It's an ever-developing area of law. But I always like to go back to basics with these things, Emil, and I always like to think to myself, well, what does the international law say? And if we stretch its application to where we currently are, I think we have to go back to that lack of recognition of any claim of sovereignty.
And so is that the situation with the moon, which has an American flag flying on it, I think, to this day, but doesn't belong to America because it doesn't belong to anybody?
That's right. So look, the moon as part of a celestial body, as part of outer space, look, its sovereignty isn't recognisable if someone were to try and claim ownership over the moon. So I think we're going to see more discussions happening in this area, certainly as time progresses. But just bringing it back to basics, space is open for all nations to explore.
Maria, just finally on this, what do you do in your sort of day-to-day when it comes to space law? Like, how is space law practiced at this point in time in 2024? Like, what does it mean? What does it involve for you?
Certainly all sorts of things. Sometimes, especially here in Aotearoa, might be looking a little bit at launch licenses or maybe payload permits, people wishing to put things on a rocket to go into space. Sometimes I might be looking at various other things. There's just all sorts of things that come across my desk. There's also a lot of commercial things that I would probably look at as well as they pertain to an organisation that may be dealing with space.
It's fascinating stuff. I'm sure that the law is going to develop in very exciting and unpredictable areas in this particular area of law over the coming years and decades, and it will be fascinating to see where it goes. Maria Pozza, thanks so much once again for joining us on Nights Tonight. That was Maria Pozza, who is a space law expert. If you're going to be an expert in any area of law, well, for me anyway, we'll probably be space law because it sounds very interesting.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.